The end of the baseball season is as good a time as any to look back at its beginnings. The game has changed much in the last 100 years, but our passion for the sport has never diminished. In his book, The Giants of the Polo Grounds, Noel Hein traces the history of the New York Giants, a team famous for being eccentric on and off the field. But his book is also a story of when the game was young and reckless. Hein says that there was something about the rough-and-tumble nature of the game from the start that captured the country's imagination.
Perhaps it was tuned into the times in the country when the country was growing up, and it had a way of reflecting what was going on in the country. In the 1880s and 1890s, it was a free-reeling, brawling game played by mostly by immigrants. Baseball then reflected that era the same way in the 1930s, a team like the Gas House Gang, the scrappy, poor man's team from St. Louis, kind of typified the typical man who was having a tough time to just getting along during the Depression. If you go back a decade into the 1920s, obviously the era of Ruth, it perfectly typified the jazz age. The big, smashing, majestic drive, the Yankees. It was, you know, right there.
Well, I think it was Connie Mack who said that baseball was just one step above sort of criminal activity. I mean, you talk about the danger of the field, but that it was a pretty rowdy kind of sport, I suppose.
Yes. Connie Mack said that back in the, I think, 1890s, something like that. He was, I wouldn't quite call it criminal activity, but he knew his way around the rules a bit also. One of his pet tricks was to freeze baseballs before a game. And he was a catcher when he was a player. Most people remember him, if they remember him at all, as the manager and the owner of the Phillies. But he was a pretty fair catcher in his own right in the 1880s and 1890s. And he would put a bunch of baseballs in a ice bucket before a game, and then put them, conceal them on his person, switch them with a live ball when the other team was batting.
And what happens to a frozen baseball if you hit it?
Well, if you try hitting it, you get the same feeling in your hands as if you hit a rock with a bat. It doesn't go anywhere.
And it vibrates
in
your arms.
And it vibrates, yeah. And better yet, it doesn't go anyplace. Now, of course, he was doing that in the era when there was only one umpire. So you could take advantage of the umpire, just wait for the man's back to be turned.
Well, there were some wonderful early characters, and I suppose Mike Kelly is considered the first sort of superstar. Now, my understanding is he used to run from first directly to third base.
Right, and it wasn't...
Forget about second.
He was fast anyway, but again, you're dealing with an age in which there was only one umpire. So if Kelly was on first base and a ball was hit to the outfield, the umpire was usually watching the ball in the outfield to make sure that the same ball that was hit was the ball that came back. And Kelly would use that as an opportunity to just go directly from first to third. And of course, needless to say, he would do that in front of the home crowd more than the road crowd.
Yes.
And of course, if the umpire turned to the home crowd and said, did he go from first to third? Oh, no, not at all. His footprints could be in the mound or the pitcher's box
didn't
at the
happen.
Time, and it didn't happen. Kelly was once sitting in the dugout. There were two outs in the ninth, and he wanted to get out of there. And somebody, back then, you could introduce yourself into the game simply by saying, I'm in the game for so-and-so. So there was a pop-up over near the Boston bench. I think he was playing for the Boston Bean Eaters at the time. So Kelly comes running out of the dugout, screams, Kelly in the game for O'Rourke at first, catches the ball, and that was a legal out. And the game was over.
You focus your book on the Giants.
Mm-hmm.
And why did you choose that particular team to sort of chronicle, I suppose, a certain life of baseball? But why the Giants?
Strangely enough, it had never been done before. There had been a couple of books written about the team, but they were not the in-depth kind of thing that I wanted to do. I've always been sort of fascinated by the team, and a couple years ago, I'll tell you the exact genesis of the book. There used to be an art gallery on Madison Avenue. It's still there. And one of the things amidst their art that they had in the window was a picture of the 1955 Brooklyn Dodger World Championship team, the only Brooklyn team to ever win the World Series. And I used to look at this thing and get angry each day and think to myself, why do people keep writing books about the Dodgers and the Yankees? No one has ever written a book about the New York Giants. So I thought, well, wait a minute. You know, so then I started to bombard my publisher with suggestions, and it took a couple years beyond that before they'd go along with it.
Well, the Giants were purchased in 1895 by Andrew Freeman, who had kind of very shady associations. But you say a terrible thing about him, which is the best thing said about him, is that he's dead.
Yes.
And this is someone who loves the Giants saying this.
Me?
Yes. Yeah,
well, that's because Andrew Freeman is probably the worst owner of a baseball team that anyone has ever seen. I've completely chronicled it in the book, and at times it just gets funny. It's so bad. He would not pay players, including his star players. He would get late on the salary checks during the season and then try to cut their salary after they'd gone home. They'd be expecting a final check back home, and he'd say, no, you were late for practice or something. He would trump up any kind of reason. He used to ban sports writers from the ballpark if they wrote anything adverse about the Giants. He essentially, the worst thing looking at it overall was he bought the team when it was an extremely successful team in the early 1890s and really just ran it straight into the ground.
But you do credit him with choosing John McGraw as the manager.
Yes. He had one of the reasons he chose John McGraw as the manager was the American League was making noises about coming into New York, and he decided to hire McGraw so that the American League couldn't get McGraw from Baltimore or with Baltimore, move the Baltimore franchise to New York in 1903, and really set up a literally major league operation across town from the Giants. It was one of his last acts as owner of the Giants, and strangely, it was one that affected the team for the next half century.
Well, he played something called, or the team played something called inside baseball, which was, I guess, McGraw's. This is something he cooked up.
Yes, I forget whether he actually coined the term or not, but it was a term applied to McGraw-style baseball. It really goes back to the time when the typical baseball game would end 2-1 or 3-2 or 1-0. And it was McGraw's theory that what you did was you got yourself on first base some way, and then you put things in motion. You put a runner in motion. You tried to fool fielders into thinking you were going to hit a ball one way and you'd hit it the other way, and you basically scratched out a run. The goal in an inning was to get one or maybe two, but you didn't go for that big inning. In fact, to jump ahead a little bit, McGraw was really undone by the advent of the New York Yankees, who in 1920 came along and played powerhouse baseball. It was called TNT ball at the time, and it was stand on the bases and let your big guys hit a home run. Naturally, the big guy was Ruth, who hit a lot of them.
And there was mutual loathing there, wasn't there?
Absolutely. I have a great picture in the book of McGraw and Ruth standing. They hated each other. McGraw and Ruth standing almost next to each other. Ruth's agent is standing precariously in
looking
between
the two
of them.
Looking very nervous between
looking
these
nervous,
two guys.
Looking like he can't wait for the picture to be taken so we can get out of there.
You write a lot about old-time baseball. I mean, baseball's early roots. Is that because you think it's better baseball than is being played today?
I don't really know whether it's better. There was sort of something cozy and charming about it, and I think that it certainly had a lot more character, unless, of course, we're making the mistake of recognizing character only in retrospect and not seeing it today. But there was something special about going out to an old ballpark, which you can still do in the American League, sitting so close to the field that you could really hear the players and everything. Now, so many of these fields are, a lot of times the sight lines are better, but there's kind of something missing today, that there's a certain flavor of those old parks. You can get it if you go to a game at Fenway, for example, in Boston, that I think we have lost. And again, most of the players today are conglomerates. I mean, you've got guys making several million dollars a year, a couple million dollars or something. Some of that, a lot of the financial security has taken away from the intensity of the game.
Taking the edge off the game?
Taking the edge off the game, which is terrific for the players. I don't begrudge them. Most of them really do play hard. Some of them don't, but most of them do.
And it's a short life.
And
it's a short baseball life.
It's a short life, and you are at the top of your profession if you're playing Major League Baseball, so why shouldn't you cash in on it? But again, from the perspective of a fan, I think some of that old intensity is gone.
Noel Hind is a contributor to Sports Illustrated and the author of The Giants of the Polo Grounds, published by Doubleday. This is Fresh Air.